Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Victoria Finley Wolf with me again. You love when she's on the show. Her creativity is just amazing. She is just so creative. And today I asked her to come on and talk a little bit about double wedding rings, because Victoria is not afraid of anything and she has taken them to sort of a whole new level, and it's really exciting. So hi, Victoria, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning, Pat.
So you are not shy when it comes to what most people think is a difficult block. You are like, you just jump in
that, right? Oh, my God. Most people say, you know, most people only make one double wedding ring in their lifetime, not
right.
12, 13, 14. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I crazy?
And you also do Lone Stars. You do everything that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, curves. You just jump in there. So what is it that you liked about the double wedding ring?
Challenge.
What sort of drew you to that?
Sorry. Say the question again.
Sure. What sort of drew you to the double wedding ring? Why did you love that block, that shape?
Well, when I started working on that first quilt that I made, the double-edged love, that one at QuiltCon, I was sort of fascinated by playing with a quilt pattern that is just so unbelievably recognized.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's very traditional. And the fact that there's curves and the arcs in there, I thought if I was going to try to do something that was going to update a very traditional pattern, I thought what was the most complicated looking pattern that most people wouldn't even attempt to try to change? And I mm-hmm. thought that pattern itself was something that was going to be the best challenge, because it's all about the challenge for me. What can I take on that's definitely out of my own comfort zone, and that was the quilt pattern that I felt like I had to play with.
You know, don't you find, like when you're out, because you go out and lecture and teach, that so many people have like this sort of passion about that double wedding ring because maybe they have one in their family, or, you know, they've seen them, that it speaks quilt, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. It's that tradition. But just a significant what it stands for. When everyone thinks of you get married, someone's going to make you a double wedding ring pattern.
Right.
The fact that it's not even that old of a pattern,
mm-hmm.
but it's certainly made a statement for itself within the quilt patterns of the past few years.
It is fascinating, because I've had family members say to me, you know, would you make me a double wedding ring? And I'm like, no, I'll make you something else.
Wait a minute. I think I know something, though. Wasn't that the first quilt that you ever made? It was a double wedding ring?
What? It was like the third. Yes.
The third.
It was.
Still, for a new quilter to take on a double wedding ring, you know, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was, and I didn't know any better. That was why, you know, when you don't know that it's supposed to be hard, you're just like, oh, okay,
time,
I'll do that.
You
so you tend to work in series, Victoria, and I work in series a lot. After you made that double wedding ring, what happened? What happened, like, in your psyche? Because you went on to make a whole lot more.
Yeah, I didn't really plan on it being a series, but when I made that first quilt, I was just, you know, when you get those little light bulb moments and the hair stands up on your arms and you're like, oh,
mm-hmm.
my God, didn't know that was going to happen. That was really cool. That's it. And it's that little spark that kind of keeps you going. I was having so many light bulb moments when I was playing with that quilt. First of all, playing with the negative space, looking at the patterns and seeing relations between where I came from and where I am now, growing up on a farm, living in New York City, that sort of country mouse, city mouse kind of a thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Just the pattern itself and the whole sort of full circle moment. I mean, that was mm-hmm. the thing that kind of drove me to making another one, because each time I was making that sort of creative connection to memories of my past, that's when
mm-hmm.
the hair would stand up on my arms. So every time that was happening, I was like, I got to try that. I got to try that on the next quilt. And then all of a sudden I had this list of 20 different ideas that came to me, personal connections to the pattern, whether through playing through the fabrics and
mm-hmm.
you know, memories of happy memories of my childhood. that all of a sudden I was up to 12 quilts that I had made. And I thought, okay.
I know. I can't believe it. It's like when you were telling me that, I'm like, holy cow. When you work at Victoria, you work very intuitively, at least my observation.
So
when you're working with your double wedding rings, they're not, you know, they, people can recognize them as that, but you also go in, with your made fabric, your 15 minutes of play. Do you have like a plan, or does something just sort of spark a direction? How does it work for you?
Usually it's by accident. Something will fall next to each other, whether it's a color or a palette, or the way I've cut a piece of fabric in a print will relate to something else. Mm-hmm. It's the whole concept of the 15 minutes of play, where I'm just kind of cutting things up and looking at the fabrics to see what it's going to do. And, you know, like I said, each time I did that, I was finding little elements of things that reminded me of something. So like one of the quilts is just called Remembering Christmas Past. Like I said, I've made 12 of these now. They're going to be at the Wisconsin Quilt Museum starting in June. But the Remembering Christmas Past quilt was, you know, I had stumbled across some old feed sacks, and then I had found some vintage Christmas fabric, and where the snowmen actually reminded me of my grandparents, which is very funny.
So yeah.
going to my grandparents' house at Christmas time was always so magical, you know, whether it was the smell walking into the house, those old fashioned glass light bulbs that were on the Christmas tree, the smells, the fabrics, the textures of things that were in my grandmother's house. So the quilt was totally inspired by, you know, all those sensory feelings, thoughts, smells, you know, all of that imagery to put into one quilt. So it became that I was looking for things that were really reminding me of all those happy memories, whether it was in my grandparents' garden. They were both big gardeners, and I am also. So there was a quilt that's related to the flowers that were at their house.
I think that is so neat, particularly that you got a fabric that just sort of had this flood of memories, because a lot of us have those memories, and it's just like unlocking them. And you do that so well. It's like click, click, click. Everything starts flowing. It's fun to watch your blog. You blog at bumblebeansinc.blogspot.com because you often share your process there. Tell me about the museum exhibit, because I'm sure that there'll be tons of people going.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. Like, it wasn't a planned thing, but all of a sudden I had all these double wedding rings, and I was approached by the Wisconsin Museum of Quilts and Fiber Arts to present these quilts at the museum, which the museum itself is a fabulous place. It's an old homestead farm, and the barn has been turned into a museum where the quilts will be shown. June 25th. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's this relation again, this full circle moment about being in the city and going back to the Midwest where I'm from. So to be able to have these quilts hanging there is just truly going to be a really special event.
Are they doing an open house? Are you going to be there?
Well, guess who that is? There's my dogs going crazy. They're saying hi to you. Sorry.
Oh, good. That's all right.
The show opens on the 25th, and then I'm going to be lecturing for the members, lecturing separately, teaching kind of the whole bit that whole weekend. So the 25th through the 29th of June.
Okay, good. So people can go out there and check out the museum, and maybe they'll have a chance to come and meet you. So when you do your travels, Victoria, you know, to other countries, either for work or for pleasure, do you come back and take that travel inspiration, and does it spark things in your quilt making, or does it sort of have to ferment a while?
I think all of that travel definitely makes an impact on the way that I work. You know, I try to play with as many tools and colors and things, you know, that I already have in my palette. But then when I travel and it's that whole sort of sensory overload again, where the smells come into your work, the textures and ideas of other countries. I recently got back from India, And about a year ago, I was in Africa, and all of those trips have totally changed just my mindset in general about the way that I work. I used to work very, very quickly, and I find that every time I travel, there gives me more and more to think about and ponder and look at patterns and things that existed so long ago that I can come back and, you know, take my time and really think about, you know, how those images relate to the work that I'm doing now and, you know, what can I add to that story that's already been out there in the world. And that's just another tool for me to play with. So, yeah, the travel definitely does open up my eyes just a little bit bigger to this big, beautiful world.
And you take a lot of photos, and so you have those images, and you're a beautiful photographer. So you have, you know, your art background and everything else just sort of all is coming together for you every time you make a quilt.
Yeah, that's the best part. It's just exploring quilts, exploring the world, and seeing how you can make it all fit together.
Now, if somebody wants to take a workshop with you, because I know you're doing a lot of teaching right now, or, you know, so where can they find out how to hook up with you?
On my website, bumblebeansinc.com. I have a page for teaching and events that has the next 2 years of my teaching schedule. There's a lot on there. This summer I'll be all over in the Midwest, and I look forward to seeing so many great quilters. And that's the best place to get all the information.
Oh, very, very wonderful. Victoria, this has been so great to have you come on and chat about your double wedding rings. Congratulations on having so many and having them displayed in the museum, Wisconsin Museum of Quilt and Fiber Arts. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So I hope I'll see tons of you guys there. I hope you can get to the museum to see the quilts. And if not there, you'll be able to see them next year at the International Quilt Study Center as well in Nebraska. So hopefully we can get them around so people can see them.
Great. Well, thank you, Victoria. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have Heather Jones of Olive and Ollie back on the show with me. We are going to talk about solids and modern quilts and American-made fabric. That's really, really exciting. So welcome to the show again, Heather.
Thank you for having me.
It's always so exciting to talk to you. And you are a busy person. You have been working on a lot of things, delivering a lot of big projects, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a little wild, but it's been fun.
Yeah. Wow. It's always fun. Yeah. So let's talk. Let's talk about solid fabrics first, because that's something that you love, and a lot. You don't always just use solids, but you know, people get kind of afraid of them in a way, I think, because they're so intense. There's not sort of like you can't hide anything with a solid fabric. Do you hear that a lot?
That's true. Yeah. And I mean, I love beautiful prints, and I do use some prints, but I'm drawn to solids. And I think because I feel like I have more control of the overall design that I'm working on, because, you know, I get to pick, you know, a particular shade of blue or a particular shade of gray or whatever color I'm using. I get to choose the specific color. I'm not relying like on a print that has a lot of different colors to colors. So, and I think that can scare people sometimes, because, you know, it's just sort of up to you to put whatever together that you want, which is really exciting. And I hope to help people overcome their fears, because the results can be really beautiful in working in that manner.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, from a personal standpoint, when I first started quilting, my beginning teacher wanted me to put a solid in with my project. And I was like, what? That has like no pattern, you know, like I just couldn't even, I mean, I did it and I'm like, you know, because I thought, well, I'm learning. I'll just do it. You know, I'll take their advice. See, but, it, you know, it's sort of like I wanted to use the pretty stuff, you know, with all the print. How do you collect solids? What do you collect them?
I favor it's that, you know, I tend to buy a bolt of just to have it on hand. I'm just kind of drawn to all different colors, so I don't really collect a lot other than making sedentals, like, you know, some good creams and whites and neutrals, things like that. But I've got my favorite aquas and greens that I love. So, but then, you know, I've also been working in, I'm trying to go out of my comfort zone and work in color palettes that might not necessarily be my first choice. So it's really just whatever catches my eye at the point in time for, you know, whatever project I may be working on.
Okay, so you're not one of those people who sort of has to go out and have the whole color spectrum at your fingertips at 2 a.m. or anything?
No, I have a lot of fabric. I do have a lot, and I've got lots of colors. But, the way I've been working, I've been really busy working on a book. So, you know, I've got certain projects in mind. And I usually have a color scheme in my head for that particular project. So, you know, I may have what I need for that. But I don't tend to just buy tons of stuff and let it usually gets used pretty quickly.
Right. So I know some people just like to have it all, you know, all the time there, just at the color tip, you know, at their fingertips. You know, let's talk about the American made fabric from Clothworks, because you have been working with them. Tell me a little. This is so exciting to have a new fabric line made in the U.S.
Right. It's made entirely in the U.S. The cotton is grown in Arkansas. There's a spinner in South Carolina and a textile factory in South Carolina, too, that creates everything. So the fabric is, you know, the cotton that makes the fabric is grown. Then that cotton is then spun into yarn here and then woven into fabric here. So it is really exciting.
Wow. I know. It's somebody
it's amazing,
on Facebook
isn't it?
Wrote. Go ahead.
Oh, no. And it's a great quality fabric, too. It's the folks are really interested in a high quality material, and it's got a really nice weave, and it's got a nice hand. It's just, and they've got beautiful colors. They right now have 50 colors available, and there's some beautiful saturated colors in their line. So lots of fun things to pick from.
If somebody wrote to me on Facebook and said that they actually grow cotton, they're farmers, and they're hoping that maybe some of their cotton got made into this fabric.
That would be great. That would be, I mean, I just think it's great.
Now, how did you, there's actually a website called AmericanMadeBrand.com, which is all about this fabric line with Clothworks. How did you get involved with Clothworks people?
They contacted me. They saw my work. They saw that I primarily work in solids, and they contacted me to work with them. So I've been working on some patterns using their fabrics, and I'll be sharing four brand new patterns that I've created with their fabrics at Quilt Market very soon.
Ah, so very, very cool. Now, we also, you and I are both got invited to do a tour, a blog tour, which is going to kick off on May 19th.
Right.
So do you want to start out? You can start out and tell about it.
Yeah, sure. It's a fun idea. It's, you know, tied back to an American-made product, and one of the owners of Clothworks is doing a license plate tour. So they've asked someone from every state in the country to design a quilt block the size and license plate that has to do with the state that that person lives in. So you're in Virginia. I'm in Ohio. So every day, I believe we'll show two a day. So you want to definitely keep an eye out for those. And then you can put all the license plate state blocks together and make your own American quilt using American made.
It is so exciting. You and I are on the group list. There's 50, you know, there's all of us there making, and people have started to make their blocks and show them the other designers. And I am just, you're doing Ohio, I'm doing Virginia. I've seen some incredible, incredibly creative license plate blocks. And then we're just going to send our original blocks to the Clothworks company, and they're going to build a final quilt too.
Right. Yeah.
Yay, exciting. Have you started your block yet?
I have not. I've been busy on other things.
But, that's okay. I haven't started mine either. I have ideas.
But I will probably start in the next week or so. But no, I've had other things. I've had to do earlier deadlines that had to be completed first. So
I know. I'm the same way. I'm like, okay, yes, we can do this, but not today.
Yes.
We'll be doing it soon.
But yeah, we'll get it done.
So tell me, let's talk a little bit about studio spaces. You relocated your, you know, you have a new home not that long ago and built, you know, put together a space for yourself. What did you do in the process of sort of reinventing your workspace?
I tried to make it, my previous space evolved out of a different room. We had a different purpose for that room, and I didn't. So what I'm saying is I didn't set out and make that room a studio from the beginning. So it was sort of nice to be able to have the opportunity to do that new place because we, you know, I knew it was going to be a studio. So I kind of took that opportunity to create it as we moved in. So I made sure to have a very large dedicated wall space for a design wall, which I did not have at my old place. I had a design wall, but I've got one entire wall of the room is a design wall. So I stapled flannel up on the wall. So that's great to lay out projects, blocks, and quilts in progress. Or if I want to audition, you know, fabric choices, I can just put them up on the wall and kind of take a step to look at it. So that's a great thing that I have that I really use a lot in my studio. I have a really large cutting surface, a big cutting table with a big cutting mat, which is nice. Although, frankly, it sort of collects things. I have to keep cleaning it off. And I have an industrial singer. It's from the 60s. And so that takes up a big chunk of studio space, too. And it's positioned nice, though, in front of a window, so I can kind of keep an eye out on what's going on in the yard while I'm working.
So how do you like that machine? You're just sort of branching off here from the space. But how do you like the industrial machine?
I love it. It's loud. It's kind of loud. It kind of it's got a serious motor, so I turn it on, and it's, you know, it's there. So, but it's incredibly fast. It doesn't do anything fancy, but for my work, that's all I use. So, I don't really need anything else, but, is a workhorse. It's good. Makes a beautiful stitch line as well.
And so you really actually like bought that from a person like on Craigslist, right?
What's that?
Didn't you buy this from a person on Craigslist?
I got this one free. I got this free from a men's suit company that was relocated. So this was used by the tailors at this shop. And they were going to throw them out. So I saw it from a friend on Facebook, and we drove downtown and rescue these machines. So yeah, I got it free. I was pretty lucky. But yeah, it's solid. I don't think that there's anything it couldn't sew through if I wanted to, or if I needed to.
Yeah, if you need to. Leather, you know, you had to fix up
Totally.
And it's leather bag.
It's funny because I do have some smaller machines, and it's kind of hard to go back to them after using this big thing.
Are you doing your quilting through your three layers?
I have quilted on it, but I found that the process that puts a lot of pressure on the layers, and I've even tried to adjust it. I don't really, and I thought I would like it for quilting because it's got a nice big throat space, but I don't really like it for quilting. So I have tried it, but it wasn't my favorite. I found it puckered a little bit.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So is there one... big tip you can give people for rearranging their studio space, like one thing that they should think about before they dive in?
I think, you know, storage is good, to have lots of storage if you can. I mean, just try to make the best use of your space, and, you know, maybe make a list of things that are most important for you. You know, if you need a design wall, if you need, you know, a big cutting space, I think those are key items. But just try to make whatever space you have for you.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important, because I've rearranged my own space, different rooms in my house and different configurations, and knowing your workflow is so important.
Yeah, makes it easier for sure.
For sure. Now, people can visit you, Heather, online, right? Tell us where they can find you.
Yeah, I have a blog called oliveandollie.com, and I also have a new site in the works, heatherjonesstudio.com. And that should be up and running very soon. We're working on that now. So that will be the new site. Heather Jones Studio will be devoted more to my patterns and even some finished quilts for sale. And then I'll continue to blog at my site, oliveandollie.com.
Perfect. Well, this has been wonderful to chat again, Heather. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
We are going to take another break with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box, label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is brought to you by the Moda Bake Shop. You can go out and visit them at modabakeshop.com. I have Elizabeth Daxson of Don't Call Me Betsy here, and she has a passion for teaching free motion quilting. And all of us, I think every single person wants to be able to quilt their own quilt. Even if they don't do them all, they still want to be able to do it. And I thought it'd be fun to have her on and talk a little bit about how she's approaching teaching free motion quilting and what her experiences are and that kind of thing. So welcome to the show. Welcome back, Elizabeth.
Hi, Pat. So good to be back.
You know, when did you sort of dabble in the free motion? Did you start with your first quilt, or did it take you a little while?
It actually started with my first quilt. I think I was so clueless with my first quilt, I didn't know that free motion quilting was something that many quilters feared or didn't do. I didn't even know what long arming was at the time. I just thought, I'm making a quilt, so I got to put some quilting stitches on it, and I free motioned it.
That's so funny. You know, I think it's like when you don't know, you just do stuff, don't you? It doesn't
Absolutely.
Even occur.
You just go for it.
I know when I first quilted, I first learned I did everything by hand because that's what the class was. But then, you know, I progressed very quickly to the machine, and I personally knew I was going to make a lot of quilts. I just knew it. And so I had to learn how to quilt some of them because I wasn't going to send them all out to somebody else. Have you ever sent quilts out to be quilted, or have you always done your own?
I've finished every single quilt that I've made.
So oh, wow.
I've never used a long armor. I appreciate long arming very much, but I enjoy the free motion process, and I'm a little bit too much of a control freak, I think, to give somebody else my quilt to finish. So I've done them all.
Wait till you get some hard deadlines, Elizabeth. I have
oh, goodness,
some people I can tell. I can introduce
it's,
you
to. It's hard, it is, but I enjoy it. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Let's talk a little bit about when you started to teach others. You know, you're doing it for yourself is one thing, but then at some point, did somebody ask you to teach, or did you decide you wanted to teach and this is what you wanted to share with people?
I first started thinking about teaching quilting classes about a little over 2 years ago. A new local shop was opening in my area. I had met the owners and was really excited about supporting them, and I had decided that I wanted to try to teach in their shop. I hadn't taught quilting before that. I'd been quilting myself for a few years before that, and thought that, well, free motioning is something I really enjoy, so perhaps I can inspire others to enjoy the process as well. So I just kind of jumped in head first with my first free motion quilting classes, and to this day, it's still the most popular thing that I teach. I teach it on a regular basis still to this day at that very shop.
Oh.
And pretty much every month the class fills up. I keep thinking that I'm going to run out of students locally, but people keep coming back for more, and it's a lot of fun to see someone walk into my class, whether they're dragged by a friend, convinced that they'll never be able to free motion at home, or mm-hmm. if they've tried before and had problems, to have them walk out of my class feeling good about what they've learned and feeling prepared to keep free motioning. So that's the thing I really enjoy about it.
Yeah, it is one of those very satisfying parts of the whole process. There's, you know, lots of parts that take us a little bit longer to master. And for most people, free motion is one of them. I've taught people for years, and the same thing. It's like, you know, you think that you would run out of people wanting to learn, but there's always somebody who's never dabbled.
Absolutely. And the thing I like to say in my classes is that with free motion quilting, it takes a lot of practice. Practice makes progress in free motion quilting. It doesn't make perfect, because I really think that there's no such thing as perfect free motion quilting. And as soon as you can let go of that hang up and be willing to work through the process and take photos as you go so that you can see the progress that you're making, you're going to have a much more enjoyable journey with it.
So tell me a little bit about how you approach getting people started who've never done it before, because there's certain things that make it easier and you progress more quickly. So how do you approach that?
The first thing that I like to do when I'm teaching a free motion class is I like to get a feel for where everyone's at experience-wise. Have they tried it before? Is this their very first venture? And if they've tried it before, what kinds of problems have they run into? free motion quilting really has a laundry list of possible issues that you can run into. And a lot of times, you know, when you run into an issue, if it's something you don't know what to do to fix, it can be a bit of a stop sign for you. It can really stop you in your tracks. So I like to talk a good bit about troubleshooting and the things to think about when you run into trouble when you're free motioning so that it isn't something that stops you, because I know how frustrating that can be. The other thing that I really like to do is to make sure to talk about the notions and tools that I like to use in free motion quilting. Mm-hmm. Free motioning is a really personal kind of thing, and there are a boatload of notions that are out there, but I like to share the ones that I've found valuable and that I've found useful and go back to again and again. I don't think that free motion quilting needs to be an expensive venture, so I do keep my notions and tools a bit on the minimal side, but I do like to share the things that I find that work best, like the needles that I like to use, the gloves that I like to use, and that type of thing.
So what do you like? What are your sort of top couple of tools?
My top couple of tools, I would say my top three would be the needles that I choose to use, which are top stitch needles. For my machine, I like to use the 9014 size, but each machine is a little bit different with that. I use the top stitch needle because it has that elongated ovular type of eye, larger than a standard quilting needle. It allows the thread to glide through much more easily so that there isn't any snapped thread or broken thread caused by the eye being too small for the thread. The other thing I like about the top stitch needles is that they don't bend anywhere near as easily as any other type of machine needle because they have an added groove for stability in the shaft of the needle. I also really like working with Orifil thread. I find that good thread makes for a much, much happier free motion quilting experience.
Yes.
I love the 50-weight thread. It's beautiful, and there's so many colors. It's like a candy shop looking at a thread card for Orifil. And the other thing that I like to use are Machinger's gloves. They're real lightweight, and coming from Florida, a lightweight free motion quilting glove is really, really important. I don't want to be wearing, you know, a heavy wool glove or anything like that. But the thing I love about Machinger's is they're so light and durable that you can actually do other things while wearing the gloves, like swapping out a bobbin, for example, or changing out your top thread and rethreading your needle. You don't have to take the gloves off, which sounds silly, but in the moment, it's nice to not have to do that.
Now, are those the ones, what color are they?
They're white. With a bit of a gray cuff around the wrists. They're real lightweight. They feel almost as though they're made of hosiery, but then at the tips of the fingers, all the way around the actual fingertip is a bit of a rubberized surface to give you some good grippability.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, I started machine quilting, you know, like 20 years ago when there really weren't any gloves, you know, there weren't any tools really. So I learned to do all of that without gloves, but I know that they help lots of people, and our skin changes, doesn't it, Elizabeth? Like your fingers will get drier depending on the weather or just your body. And so those really, it's really good to have a little bit of grip.
Definitely.
So you actually are, besides teaching, you know, where people can hire you to come to their guild or their quilt shop, you also are new to online teaching. And so you are teaching this very thing that we're talking about, free motion quilting, at Craftsy. What is that workshop like?
Oh, it's a ton of fun. Craftsy has been such a joy to work with, and I love the opportunity to get to share my free motion quilting tips and tricks with people really all over the world. It's so fun to think that there are people out there in their pajamas watching the class at any given point in time, which is fantastic. The class is called Start Free Motion Quilting. It's now available, and it's really about how to get started with free motion quilting on your domestic home sewing machine, whether it's, you know, your grandmother's machine or a machine that you just went out and bought at your dealer last week. I talk a good bit about the way to set up your machine, the tips and tricks that I've learned over the years, and as well as troubleshooting. There's actually a big troubleshooting checklist that's part of the class materials so that when you run into a problem, you can go through the tips and tricks and the troubleshooting there to figure out what's causing the problem and what to do about it. Because like I said before, there are so many different things you can run into with free motion quilting that can be so frustrating. The other great thing in the class is that there are 9 different free motion quilting stitches that are taught in the class. They're shown step by step, both drawn out on an iPad-like device to give you a feel for the shape of the stitch, as well as stitched in front of the camera to show you exactly what I'm doing to create those shapes on the stitch. So it's a lot of fun. There's also 3 patterns associated with the class. There's 2 pillow patterns and a baby quilt. So it's a really, really great class for getting started and giving you the tools and the tricks that you'll need to get started with free motioning.
What do you, what is kind of your go-to design? Do you have a design right now that you use for either overall or like as a fill that you're enjoying doing?
I think the one that I'm enjoying the most right now is a stitch that I call the L. It's like a cursive L. So mm-hmm. it's just a bit of a loop. It's really fun to play with scale with that particular stitch to do some that are really nice and tall and then some that are shorter. Playing with scale is a fun thing I really like to do really with any type of free motion quilting stitch. It just gives more depth and more interest to the stitch. But I think that's probably my go-to design right now. I tend to go through cycles where I'll do a lot of one stitch and then I'll kind of change gears and do another stitch for a while. Keeps things nice and fresh for me.
And, you know, I watched your some of your class, and I liked your clamshell because I love a clamshell or a Baptist fan, you know, those kind of things. But your clamshell was cool, how you you did it with a little tail on it. So that was pretty neat.
Oh,
do you do a lot of straight stitching with your free motion?
I do on occasion do some straight lines. I try to call them organic lines because they are never perfectly straight. But honestly, as much as I love straight line quilting and the look of straight line quilting with a walking foot, I don't enjoy using my walking foot quite as much as I enjoy free motioning. If I want something super duper straight, usually what I'll do is take out some painter's tape, slap it onto my quilt top, and try and follow that as a guide. But usually I really prefer more of the curvy, more creative types of lines on my quilts.
Yeah. And we have about 30 seconds. Can you tell me, would you plan out your designs for a particular quilt, like on paper or anything, before you sit down and start?
I do. I definitely figure out what I want to do with the quilt before I get started with my stitching. I either do it electronically, doodling on top of an actual photograph of the quilt, either on an iPad or in Photoshop on my computer, or I'll print out a picture and doodle with a Sharpie or a pen on an actual printout to get a feel for what the stitch will look like.
Yeah, very, very neat. Yeah, I've used PicMonkey, load it in, and then you can draw over top of it in PicMonkey with the tools, which is an online website. So that's another place, too, to do that kind of thing. Elizabeth, this has been wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat.
Everybody, to be able to find you and find your class, they can go to don'tcallmebetsy, all squished together.com. And I'm sure if you put in Elizabeth Jackson, it will also pop up your site.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, this is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a break and then we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have got John Kubanak here, and I met him online through Twitter or Facebook or somewhere. And then finally, you know, a few years down the road, we got to meet in person. And John is just an amazing quilter. He is a designer. He does a lot of machine quilting, does work for magazines. But the name of his company is, I think, what we probably started talking about, which is Big Rig Quilting. And it's like, you know, who can't be interested in somebody who names their company that? So, John, welcome to the show.
Well, good to be here, Pat.
So you have been creating for a long time. You're a very, very creative person. When did you discover quilting?
Oh, my. Probably, who knows when. It was a long time ago. I've always been doing different crafts projects and different things, whether it's cross stitch or embroidery. And, you know, I saw quilting shows on PBS and TV and says, like, oh, I'd like to do that sometime. And gradually started buying books and saying, well, I'm going to do it someday. And then I was probably wanting to do it for probably 10 years before I finally actually did it.
Ah, yeah. Isn't that funny how you sort of see something and you're like, oh, yeah, I like that. But, you know, that day finally comes when you buy the fabric.
Yeah, well, for me, it was like I bought a sewing machine on speculation is what I call it. I figured if I had a sewing machine, maybe I'd start to learn how to quilt. Well, it sat in the closet for 3 years, and then I finally took it out to hem a pair of pants and put it back in. Then a couple years later, I finally took a quilting class. So,
oh, that's pretty cool. So why did you name your company Big Rig Quilting?
Well, I had got a long arm machine because I wanted to start doing some long arm quilting. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out a name for the company. And all I could think of was cutesy quilty names that didn't really kind of fit a guy doing long arm quilting. And my partner was looking at it and he says, it's like driving a big rig, isn't it, when you're moving that big machine around? And I thought, like, well, that might work. And so it was the best one. And I took it and used it. And I knew it worked because I was at a quilt show taking a class and I won a prize. And so I put my business card in and it was Big Rig Quilting. And then I walked in a few days later to the same teacher's different class by the same teacher. And she just says, hey, Mr. Big Rig, how you doing? So I knew I had a winner.
It is awesome. And your logo is really awesome. I love it. It's, yeah, it is really nice. And Big Rig, it's like, I think right away trucking, but, you know, it does fit a big long arm. Were you originally long arm quilting as your total business?
Yeah, I got a long arm machine to do a long arm quilting for others. And then I started doing quilt designs that started popping up in other places. And kind of my work kind of shifted more doing designing quilts and creating quilts for magazines and fabric companies and all of that. And so long arm quilting kind of for customers fell by the wayside for a little bit, but I'm picking that back up again since I've relocated to Rochester.
Yeah, you have a new space, so you have more room. That's really wonderful.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
do you have a few tips, John, because you know a lot about long arm machines from using them and looking at them. Do you have a few tips for people if they want to go out and sort of research getting one?
Well, I would say talk to people that already own machines to see what they like about their machines and maybe some things that they wish they had on them that they don't. But to go to quilting shows, I mean, you go to some larger local quilting shows or any of the larger, like, you know, shows that are around the country, the manufacturers are there and they have them set up. And I just say go around and the best thing is to try out different machines and see how they feel and move for you and try to determine, you know, what you really need the machine for. Do you want it for, you know, going into business or is it just finishing quilts for yourself and, you know, try them out and see what works for you the best. And I'd say if you're a threadaholic and you really like to use a lot of different threads, you know, try out the different threads on the machine to make sure they work because, you know, not all machines are equal. And some machines are more thread friendly than others. And so you just, you know, want to make sure you've got something that'll work for you.
Now, you have a, those are really good tips, particularly going to the shows. You know, people need to try them and stand there and see what the whole experience is of, because it's different than pushing the fabric under your domestic machine. You're driving the machine across the surface. And so it's a totally different motion.
It is, yes.
And you have, you have to get a little bit used to that if you've done the other. You have been invited to work with Bernina Sewing Company to do some testing for them. And I just think that this is so much fun. Tell me a little bit about why they invited you to come join their team and what you're testing.
Well, after I moved out of New York City, I received an email from the city quilter, from Dale Real there, that he forwarded to me from Bernina saying that they were developing a long arm machine and they were looking for people to be testers. And so I figured, like, well, I've got the time. Let's see what, you know, what will happen. And so I wrote to them and they wrote back. We went back and forth and we had some talks and discussions and interviews, and they invited me to be part of the team that is testing the machine. The only problem is that I have to go to the factory in Switzerland to do the testing.
Oh, it is such a hardship.
Yeah,
I
know that. That's what everybody says.
We don't feel sorry for you going to Switzerland. Of course, you went to Switzerland in December, so you got to experience the winter wonderland there, right?
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah, because the factory's in Steckborn, Switzerland, which is right on the German border, and about 20 minutes away, we were able to get to a town in Germany that had one of the largest Christmas markets in Germany, and so it was just a wonderful experience of being there for the Christmas holidays right before that, because I think I got home on December 22nd or 23rd, so it was quite a wonderful time to be there.
Now, will you be going back to the factory to do the testing on site still?
Yes, I'm going to be packing my bags in a couple days here and just heading out on this coming weekend on the 23rd of May to do the testing, do another 2 weeks of testing. So I think that'll be the kind of, we're kind of coming down to the home stretch here because the machine's going to be hitting the market in the fall. So it's exciting to be part of this.
That is just so fun. I haven't been to Switzerland since I was a little girl. I went to Girl Scout camp in Switzerland. And that was the only time that I was there. And half the trip we were in the woods. So I like to go back and go to the Christmas market. That would be really fun.
It'd be fun.
Let's talk about your quilts. You are a color person. You love color and you love red. Tell me a little bit about how you approach color with your quilt making.
Oh, my. I tend to like the brighter saturated colors is my preference. If I'm kind of drawn to something, and if you look at my stash, it's red is the number one color there.
Good.
I'm awful at the color wheel and knowing which colors are technically this related to that and the other thing. I take my cue. I like looking around in nature and just seeing what colors go together in flowers, and also just enjoy going to art galleries and just looking and seeing how different painters put colors together, and I don't know, I just kind of soak that up and it comes out of my quilt somehow.
And you're also going out now and traveling and teaching. You've been published in many, many places. So you have like a large variety of patterns available. What do you teach when you go out?
When I go out, I'm teaching more intermediate, different techniques of piecing techniques. It could be curved piecing, of working with the winding ways block and doing designs with that, or drunkard's path block, spider web block. So and that's what I enjoy teaching locally also, just helping people go, beyond the basics to the next step to help them hone their skills a little bit so they get a little bit more comfortable, and also just helping them experiment with blocks and color placement so that they're not as fearful with trying to make decisions on their own or make adaptations.
Mm-hmm. I think, with you, because you have such a long history of, you're comfortable with creating, and so you're probably, your color is a little bit more intuitive.
Yes.
You know when it's right, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, you just kind of sense when it's right, and if, there's something missing, you just kind of put different things with it and just say what's going to work, what's not going to work, and just experiment. And that's why, I really like using a design wall, because it helps to kind of see what will work and what won't.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand you have a little philosophy on unfinished objects, or UFOs. Tell me about that.
Well, like everybody, I have a lot of them. And in fact, the first ever quilt that I started was a hand pieced class that I took in hand piecing. So I figured I'd start with the basics. And I still have those five individual blocks. They're still not in the quilt. But what I do is, I guess I kind of inherent in the family genes. I found out that when we're clearing my house out after my mother died, she would put all the projects that she had, she would just put it together in a box with the instructions and the leftover parts. And so it was always easy to find and go back to and make more of. And so that's what I kind of do with my UFOs. The Container Store loves me because I probably, you know, keep them, you know, in business with plastic containers. And when I'm working on a project and it's not finished, I put all the fabric and the unfinished pieces and, you know, the instructions if they're a published pattern or, you know, reference to what the book is, and I just store it away and label it so that I know what it is. And I now have them all in one place so I can go to them and, you know, finish them up when I have some time. But the problem is the stack keeps growing.
I know, that darn stack. I do like the idea, though, John, of keeping it all together, because I think that's where some of us, you know, lose track of it. It's because, you know, the special fabric you needed got somehow put back on your shelf, and, you know, your directions got put back in the where you keep your directions.
Right.
So then it's impossible to sort of.
Yeah, it's just a helpful tool just to keep it all together. And especially, you know, when I'm working on a project for a magazine or something else like that, there may be a couple things going, and I just, you know, try to keep it all together, so then that way I can just take the bin and go and work on it, and I know what I need is there and the right stuff is there, and I don't have to kind of forge around in my room for it.
Yeah. Well, John, this has been so great. Tell people where to find you so they might want to, you know, have you come and do one of your talks or a workshop.
It's Big Rig Quilting. If they just do an internet search with that, it'll pop up. But it's Big Rig Quilting at blogspot.com is my blog. And on there are some different pages that'll, you know, give you my talks and workshops that I do, and also links to the, you know, different fabric websites that have the patterns that I've designed. And so people can find all my work there, or just also on Facebook as Big Rig Quilting. So.
Perfect, perfect. And you have a free pattern page, which has some really cool things that you've designed. And plus,
right,
you're in books, and people can check out all the things that you've done. So, John, this has been wonderful. I wish you great luck with the testing of the Bernina long arm. That is just a fantastic opportunity. And don't work too hard when you go to Switzerland.
I'll try not to. So, Pat, what do you want? Do you want milk chocolate or dark chocolate for when
I get back to send milk, you? Milk chocolate, John.
Milk chocolate? Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take care, Pat.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
This has been American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, where you can find videos and tutorials, and you can visit me at patsloan.com. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.